Let's spend a moment and cultivate our motivation, thinking that we will listen and share together so that we can have a peaceful heart ourselves, and from that peaceful heart extend care and compassion to the world, for the ultimate aim of the long-term happiness of all living beings. Let's talk a little bit about motivation, because that's really the key to everything, to all the work we do, whether it's work for society, for the environment, or whether it's work for our spiritual practice and spiritual aims. The motivation is really key and crucial. So I begin every day when I wake up by generating a motivation. This is what my teachers recommend. And I start out thinking the most important thing for me to do today is not to harm anybody. Do you agree? Now, usually when we wake up, is that what we think of? No, we'll usually think of, where's my coffee? Or, oops, I'm not supposed to drink coffee because beings in El Salvador are getting exploited on the coffee plantation, so I better think of something else to drink. We're often thinking our first thought is something about ourselves and our own pleasure. Okay? So first of all, switching that and putting ourselves in the context of existing with all other living beings. Okay. And so the most important thing isn't our own pleasure. It's not to harm others. Yeah? And, like I said, we usually start out thinking about our own pleasure. And then we usually follow that up by thinking of all the things we have to do today. You know, I got to get up, and I got to go here, and I got to go do that, and I have to get this press release out, and I have to go to that meeting, and I need to go on the web and read the latest thing about the environmental this and that and what's happening, and I need to send in my enrollment to this course or that seminar, and I need to write letters to my senators and, representatives, all those beep, beep, beep politicians in Washington who don't listen to me anyway, and who are screwing around in the men's bathrooms. Some of you are from Idaho, right? Yeah, your senator. Yeah. So we usually kind of start things out thinking about everything we have to do. But you see, what we have to do isn't really the most important thing to do that day. Most important thing to do is not to harm anybody. Yeah? Because if we don't have that foundation of not harming, then we may do a lot of things during that day, but there's no guarantee that they're going to be of any benefit to anybody. Yeah. So really having that motivation of not to harm. Now, we like to think of ourselves as beings who don't harm. Especially activists, you know. We're good people. We don't harm. Okay. Well, we may try not to kill. certainly not human beings. But what about the cockroaches? Yeah? We don't kill the mink or the eagles, but what about the cockroaches? Yeah? Do we kill cockroaches? So it's something to be aware of. You know, where do we draw the line about what not harming means? Yeah. Because it's easy not to harm the things that don't impact us directly. It's much harder not to harm the things that have a negative impact on us directly. Yeah? Okay. So that's not harming physically, you know, by, let's say, killing or stealing or unwise sexual behavior. Okay, then not harming verbally. That one's a little bit harder. Because we harm verbally by being deceitful and lying. But we're all honest people, aren't we? It's just those other people who twist the stories. But when we do something in our private life that we don't want anybody to know about, our covering it up isn't lying, is it? Is it lying? It's lying. Do we lie? And then what about divisive speech? Using our speech to create factions, to create disharmony, to turn one party against another party. You know, especially in work to improve society. Do we make the people who have the opposing views, do we make them into enemies, and then do we deride them? You know, do we criticize them? Do we try and turn other people against them so that there's discord? Yeah. Is that harmfulness? It is, isn't it? Yeah. And harsh words, some of the letters we write to people showing how shocked we are about the policies, those can sometimes be pretty harsh. And sometimes we're so busy benefiting sentient beings that on the outside, benefiting society, that we take our frustration out on the family, and a lot of harsh words get said to spouses and kids. Okay, and then idle talk is another kind of harmful speech where we just spend a lot of time gossiping. You know, have you heard what so and so, blah, 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 this and that. Okay? So, you know, just to look at our own behavior, and we espouse the value of non-harmfulness, but how can we live that value more in our own behavior and not change our social activism into just doing what the other party does, but, you know, the motivation's the same, but the angle is different. You know what I mean? I mean, I saw this very clearly way back when we were protesting the Vietnam War, and I was at UCLA in a protest, and some guy near me picked up a stone and threw it at the cops. And, you know, and I just went, wait a minute, that's not right. Because it really hit me that as soon as you do that, then your mind becomes exactly like the mind of the people that you're protesting. And I think that's one of the big challenges of doing any kind of activist work, is it's so easy for our mind to become exactly like the mind of the people that whose policies we oppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's really tough. And here's where all the meditations on love and compassion come in, which we'll get into later. You know, to really make sure that our mind and their mind don't become the same. I've always thought that if they ever had an international conference of fanatics, they would all get along very well in terms of the method aspect. You know, of course, what they're fanatic about, they would quarrel with each other about. But in terms of the mental state of being fanatic, they're all the same. You know, it doesn't matter whether you are a fundamentalist, Muslim, or a fundamentalist Christian, or a born-again vegetarian, you know, or a fundamentalist vegan. The mindsets are all the same. Okay? So that's what we want to avoid, because that doesn't really heal very much. You know? Because what's really happening then is the mindset, the tension in the mind, the hatred in the mind, is just choosing one thing or another to vent itself, using that thing as the front. Yeah? So either I'm going to be angry at all the logging companies, or I'm going to, you know, be angry at all the politicians, or I'm going to be angry at, you know, all the child abusers, or I'm going to be angry, you know, at all the people who eat meat, or, you know, we'll choose the thing. Yeah. I'll be angry at George Bush, or I'll be angry at Saddam Hussein. You know, it's still anger in the heart. Okay. And so the speech comes out like that. Okay, then anger in the mind. You know, when we're saying in the morning, you know, first, the most important thing is not to harm anybody. Okay, well, physically and verbally, we harm others quite directly. Yeah. Before I get to the mind, I should probably add that our verbal way of harming, I call it our hidden weapons of mass destruction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have all our little weapons of mass destruction, those words that we know, that we use to hurt somebody. And we may not be able to hurt, the executives in the timber company or the people who make pesticides or whatever. But, you know, in our family, in our social life, in other ways, we have our little weapons of mass destruction that we drop on people. You know, sometimes with such sweet voices. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like at family dinners. Yeah? Have you ever seen how sometimes family dinners are these hidden bomb fields where people play out the same old, you know, warfare each dinner? You know, so-and-so insults so-and-so who retaliates at the other one, who goes in the bathroom and cries and sets up that one, who then goes and retaliates to this one. You know, just family dynamics. Yeah. And so sometimes our speech really becomes these words of mass destruction that we even say with very sweet voices, but really can hurt people quite profoundly. Okay, so making a determination in the morning not to do that, but then, you know, we see that the physical and verbal harmfulness comes from the mind. You know, unless the mind has a harmful attitude, there's not going to be any conscious, you know, wish to harm anybody else. So there has to be some kind of harmful attitude in the mind. So some of the harm comes from greed. Now, we may cry out about other people's greed, but we have our own kind of greed, don't we? Yeah. Aren't we greedy for certain things that we want, and reluctant to give up certain pleasures that we think are absolutely essential? So it's the same kind of greed other people have. Yeah. Aren't we greedy to have a good reputation and respect? Yeah. So maybe the CEOs of some of the oil companies, that's what they're seeking. But we're seeking the same thing, just from a different group of people. But the mind's the same. I want to be respected. I want to have a big image. I want people to listen to me because it's me. Okay. So all that kind of greedy mind. Then there's the mind of ill will. Yeah, that wants to retaliate whether we do something or not. You know, I want to get even. The people who work at the insurance companies and who don't give us equal health care benefits in this country, they're all evil. May they all get sick and, you know, not have insurance policies and then see what they're doing to the rest of us. Okay, so we wish them ill. Or sometimes we just space out. It's like the whole thing's too much. I think I'll sit down, have a drink, have a smoke, space out in front of the television. Yeah. So different spacing out kind of techniques that we have. Okay. So just to think, you know, this thing of non-harming is quite big. It's quite big. And it's very easy to point out how other people are harmful. It's much more difficult to see our own harmful intents, harmful words, harmful actions. Much more difficult. Even though we live with ourselves, we're quite blind sometimes to these aspects of ourselves. And then when we do see them, then we beat ourselves up about them. Look what a terrible person I am. I'm so greedy. I lie. I sleep around. I do this. I do that. I'm so terrible. I'm so bad. I'm hopeless. I'm helpless. Woe is me. I'm never going to get out of this thing. You know? So that attitude isn't very beneficial either. Yeah, beating ourselves up about our mistaken behavior, not at all helpful. Okay, we actually need to have some techniques and do some purification and actively change the mind instead of just sitting there blaming ourselves. Yeah, what do you think? Yeah, blaming ourselves doesn't get us very well. And you know what? The whole thing of blame, it's the same mind of blame whether we blame ourselves or blame somebody else. Yeah, it's the same mind that wants to pinpoint one person or one group of people who is the source of all the problems. Yeah, so often that group of people is outside of us, depending on what it is. It's, you know, different oil companies or different this or, you know, the fur industry or the farming and the cattle industry, whatever it is, you know. It could be somebody else. It could be our boss. It could be a neighbor. It could be a relative. Anybody who does anything that doesn't meet with our approval, we put into the enemy category and blame them for our misery. Okay? And then sometimes we look inside and we see our own faults, and then we take that same mind of blame and switch it and turn the rocket on ourselves. Okay. So it's the same mental state that we're directing towards others as we direct towards ourselves. It's not helpful in either case, is it? You know? When we blame others for our problems, does that do anything? No. When we blame ourselves for our problems, does it do anything? Yes, it does. It makes us depressed. Okay? Yeah. But it doesn't help in any way whatsoever. Yeah. So we have to look at the root of this. Whether we blame somebody else or blame somebody else, what is that blaming mind? And what is lying behind that blaming mind? And what assumptions, what worldview, you know, what wants and needs lie behind our own personal blaming mind? Very interesting to research that one. Interesting to research that one. Because it seems to me, you know, when I find myself blaming, it's like I want to find the cause of my pain and then shift everything to that cause. Spend all my energy blaming that cause for my pain rather than solving my pain. You get what I mean? Somehow the mind is thinking if I blame the cause, then I get rid of my pain. Does blaming the cause get rid of our pain? No. But we were taught since we were little kids to blame the cause, and that blaming the cause would get rid of our pain. Remember when you were a little kid and you, any number of things, you know, you scratched yourself on the, a nail in the wall accidentally. And, oh, you have an owie, bad nail, make bad to the nail. Remember that? Yeah? Make bad to the nail that scratched you. You fall on the sidewalk and have your knees all banged up. Oh, make bad to the... You know, we're taught when we're 2 years old. Yeah, whatever hurts us, we blame it and we make bad to it. Because we have an owie. Yeah? We learn that at such a young age. What good did it do? Yeah? Just always blaming outside. Just blaming the sidewalk. Just blaming the nail. Just blaming the toaster because we burnt ourselves. Does that heal our own pain? No. You know, does blaming your husband or wife after an ugly divorce heal your pain? No. Okay? So blaming others doesn't heal anything. It's just the mind is stuck in the hatred and the blame. Okay? Similarly, when we blame ourselves, we're stuck in hatred and blame. We've just changed the object for variety. Yeah, gotten tired of blaming others? Well, let's have some variety in life and blame myself. Yeah, but it's the same stupid mind, basically, isn't it? You know? I'm so bad, I can make everything go wrong, I'm unworthy, I don't deserve to be on this planet. You know, if everybody even knew how bad I am, they'd never let me in the meditation hall. I sure hope these people don't read minds. Because then I'll know all the terrible stuff that's going on in my mind because I'm such a bad person. You know, and we get all wrapped up in that. Sometimes we even think that that's practicing Dharma. Yeah, that's not practicing Dharma. That's just getting stuck. Yeah, it's just the same old foolish blaming mind. Yeah, because you see what the blaming mind wants to do is locate one factor that made everything go wrong so that we don't need to change. Yeah. So the whole thing is when we blame somebody, whether it's outside or inside, we are so involved in the blaming that there's no energy to change. Huh? Remember I said that self-centered mind was very tricky? This is one of its tricks. Because especially when we blame ourselves, that's just self-centered mind, isn't it? I'm the star of the show. I can make everything go wrong. And just focusing on how bad we are keeps us from doing anything about it and changing. Yeah, focusing on blaming somebody else just gets us stuck in that rut of our own self-righteousness. Yeah, but it totally obscures actually changing. And change is the last thing that the self-centered mind wants to do. Okay? Self-centered mind gets, you know, it feeds off of being self-centered. Okay? And like I said, we're self-centered in all sorts of ways that we don't even recognize as being self-centered. Yeah? And so that's how tricky and sneaky that self-centered mind is. Because we'll sit and we'll wail, I'm so happy, I'm so unhappy. It took you a while. I'm so unhappy, I'm so miserable. You know, and then a dear friend comes up to us and says, well, why don't you do XYZ? And we go, shut up! You know, I'm too miserable to do something. Yeah? I want someone to kiss it and make it all better. Yeah, that's something else we learned, you know, at the same time with the owie that we learned to blame the toaster and the nail in the sidewalk. We learned that somebody comes and kisses it and it's all better. Yeah. So whenever we're unhappy, we want somebody to kiss us and make it all better. Yeah. We want, you know, who is it? Which fairy tale did they wave the magic wand?
Cinderella.
Was it Cinderella? Did she have a magic wand or somebody else had it? Her fairy godfather had a magic wand. Fairy godmother. Okay, her fairy godmother had a magic wand. And that's what we want, don't we? We want our fairy godmother or father, we have to be gender equal, to come and make it all better for us, rather than us exerting some kind of energy to change what's going on inside. Okay? So this whole thing of, you know, just this first intention in the morning to not harm, there's a lot going on in that one, isn't there?